Welcome to a series of podcasts about Brexit and European artists living in the UK. I'm Paul Murray from Wishbone, and I have with me here today Jorge Cretis. Welcome, Jorge.
Hello, Paul.
Thank you very much for coming in. So you're a dancer and a choreographer. You've recently choreographed Kingdom for Scottish Dance Theatre, is that right?
Well, that was 2014.
Okay, wow.
So not that recently.
Yeah, okay, well, 2 years ago. And you've also worked on some video, haven't you?
Yes, I work with Paul McCartney, Natasha Khan. I like to do my commercial work from time to time.
Yeah, impressive. So you're from Spain?
I am. Although from my accent, you might think I'm from Brighton. I was born and bred in Madrid.
Ah, okay. And how have you ended up in London?
Okay, I was living in Belgium for 3 years. And then in 2006, I came to see a friend. And then I've heard about this dance company called Canduco. They had an audition the weekend I was here. I did the audition and I got the job. And funny enough, I always grew up thinking that London, the UK, London in particular, was the promised land. Because my mom, when she was 19, she left Spain when all the dictatorship was happening, and she said to my grandfather one day, "I'm leaving." She came here to work in the UK, and I always grew up knowing that she's been the happiest that she's ever been living in London. So I was really happy to come here, and that Christmas for her present, without telling her before, it was my contract to come and live in London. And she was super happy that I was moving to the UK.
Ah, wow. And that was in, when was that, 2000?
I moved 7th of January of 2007.
Okay.
So I'm going to do 10 years now.
10 years you've been here. Is there something about London that's special for you as an artist?
Well, I was questioning that myself for 8 years and a half. And I got the answer last year. It was at the Tate Gallery. At the Tate Modern, they did this Musée de la Danse for a weekend where all the dance world was gathering. And if you know the Tate, you know that it's kind of like 200 meters from the entrance to the beginning of the Turbine Hall. Well, it took me 4 hours to reach that point because I keep meeting people and amazing friends who I haven't seen for a few weeks, for a few months, or sometimes for years, people who are dance professionals. And then that day, after talking to many different people, seeing many different performances, I realized that for the first time in my life, I belong to a community. So London, it's a community of artists, incredible artists. And it took me 10 years to meet all these people. And meeting all these people, it creates also a network for work. So although I travel a lot, I travel because all the work is generated in London. So, for example, as a chain of events, I work at the place as a teacher. One of the teachers recommended me to Rambert Dance Company to teach professional classes. One of the dancers fell in love with my classes. He was working with Carlos Acosta at the Royal Opera House. He took me to see one of the rehearsals. Carlos Acosta liked my work. And now in 2 weeks, I go to Cuba to make a piece for his company, Acosta Lampa. So although everything happens in the world, everything starts here in London.
And how do you feel now about being based in London since the Brexit vote?
Well, I have to say that I travel quite a lot. In 2016, probably I've been 10, 12, 13 weeks all in all here in London.
Okay.
So I travel a lot. I used to say to everyone that when I got the question, "Where are you based?" I normally said, "Well, between Ryanair and EasyJet, and if I'm lucky, British Airways." Okay. So I travel quite a lot.
So were you actually in London when the vote happened, or were you away?
I was, and a few weeks before the vote, I tried to register to vote because I thought it was very important, and I thought, well, I've been doing my tax return here for many years. I'm sure I'm entitled to have a word, or to have my voice heard. And no, I was not able to vote, so I was following really closely what was happening. And the night of the vote, I woke up around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I've heard that the Remain was winning. And I'm like, okay, I can continue sleeping. So the next morning, when I woke up to the news, like, something might be wrong. I don't believe this. So I was following very closely at that time.
So clearly the dance community in London is very strong. How do you feel, though, that that community will be affected by the consequences of Brexit, or if at all?
I was very worried at the beginning. At the beginning, I felt unwanted, and I felt that many of my European peers felt the same and wanted to flee ASAP. However, months has passed by and everything has settled down a little bit, and we remain strong together, making work. However, we all think about better weather, less strange political situation in other countries, but we are still here. And for a few months, I've been thinking, you know what? I am not gonna preempt what's about to happen. I live now. I live what's happening. I live with my peers, and we all keep working together strong. And whatever brings tomorrow, we'll cross that bridge when it comes.
Yeah, I mean, has the EU being, you know, us being in the EU, directly helped any of the projects that you've been involved with here? Because I wonder if
I've been part of the Erasmus project, teaching in different institutions, and that's European funding.
Yeah.
I've been in projects in which has been a collaboration between different countries, and there's been EU funding. And crossing borders and not to have to apply for visas has been really, really useful. However, I don't know how the world is in any other way, because I was born with the European community when I started traveling as a professional artist. So sure. I've never known any other way.
Yeah.
And to be very honest, I cannot imagine any other way. If that happened one day, I will decide what to do for myself. But for the moment, I just live in that uncertainty, calmly, and letting it happen. Mm. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. I mean, things are changing quite slowly. I mean, no one really knows what our relationship with Europe is going to be in 6 months' time. A lot of people know what they want it to be, but that's different. Did you actually, when the voting was taking place, did you actually know anyone who voted Leave?
No, I didn't. And for a few months, and now with elections also in the States, I realized that who would vote Leave? Who would vote for Trump? And researching a little bit, I came across with this. This is very naive of me, but I came across with this concept of social media bubble. And of course, in my news feed of Facebook, only appears the people who I relate to, who are all Remain voters or you know what I mean. So No, I don't know anyone, and I was very curious to hear what would be the reasons to leave. I couldn't hear anything that convinced me.
Mm. Yes, it's interesting about the social media bubbles. When the vote happened, I read about it through the Online Independent and the Guardian newspapers, which are centrist or left of centre. And of course, with each article, you get almost immediately a series of comments below, some from people who, you know, are absolutely opposed to most of what the Guardian and Independent put out, even in their news reporting. So I would then be led to perhaps more right-wing websites, and I'd be interested to go to those. So I got the full panoply of it all. I mean, do you listen to the news? Do you get the news mainly through social media pages or?
Well, it depends of what is the subject. I totally agree with you, and that's something I like to do a lot, because we live in a moment that we are approaching a dark ages. There's so much information out there that it's so difficult to pick what's right, what's wrong, what is resonate with you. And there is only so much that one can get informed about. And I have to be very honest, UK is not my priority. At the moment, I am the co-director of a pan-Arab dance company, which we have dancers from Morocco, Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan, Palestine, and Syria. So when I go online every morning in my breakfast, what I do is I check every single news from all over the world about what's happening in that area. to hear the different angles.
Mm.
And that keeps me informed. The rest of how the climate is changing, how the tourists are doing, what is the votes in the States, it's only my social media who feeds me. And then I realized that if I want to know something, I really want to. It's something that I knew before, but that's been highlighted big time over the last 6 months.
Sure.
We live half blinded at the moment. And that's very, very scary for all of us.
Mm. So earlier you were talking about the community of artists that you have worked with here or you still network with in London, as well as the other project that you've just mentioned. So do you feel that this community is beginning to have a creative response, not only to Brexit, but to what's happened in the States now with Trump becoming president?
Coming to here, I was very nervous thinking like, I am prepared to talk about Brexit. Am I prepared to talk about politics? Do I know enough about something? And then when I realized it's something that a teacher told me many years ago, is like, well, there is only so much that we know that we know. There is a few things that we know that we don't know. But there are incredible amount of things that we don't know that we don't know. And as an artist, I take it very, very personal. And I take this being not knowing very much as a strength. It means, what do I want as an artist? What is my vision of the world? For me, it's a little bit like the Fight Club. The first rule is you don't talk about the Fight Club. And the second rule is be very aware of the first rule. You don't talk about the Fight Club. So for me, everything goes directed of you as an artist. What is your interest? What is the thing that you really want to talk about? The second rule is be very faithful to your environment. You live in a place in 2016. You live with many different people and in an environment that is set up a little bit. What is your direction? But again, first rule is be very faithful to yourself. Second rule is very, very faithful to the environment. And the third one, that is the maximum criteria for me to create work, is does it make you excited? Are you enjoying the work? Therefore, when we talk about Brexit, when we talk about politics, when we talk about climate change, when we talk about violence, gender violence, the first rule is, are you being faithful? Are you using your art to talk about something that really, really interests you, that this is your work, and therefore how you shape it regarding what's happening around you? And then is when the research happens. And I believe that as artists, we are researchers of the impossible. We are people who try to see all the angles about that little thing that interests us, and then we put it out there as a product. And then we allowed a bigger community to think, to reflect, to discuss, and most importantly, to agree or disagree with us in order to create conversation and therefore thought-provoking work.
So you were talking about artists being very aware of their environment and the environment that they make their art in. Have you had any interest in doing some work with, even with non-dance people, in an area where people, say, have voted for to leave? People who felt ignored, you know, by politics in the last 20 or 30 years, who feel underrepresented. Because that's something that interests me. It would be interesting to work in that environment.
Not as such. I'm interested, or I've been working with people whose environment, it's very aggressive, it's very limited for their practice, and sometimes life-threatening. So when we work in Palestine, we need to be very aware that some of our artists cannot travel to Lebanon because on the way back they can end up in jail. We cannot talk about sexual identity because they might end up in jail. We cannot cross certain borders because they might be investigated for months or for years. So my interest has been to work with people whose experience and environment are difficult for them to develop their practice, but not as such as people who hasn't been underrepresented in the current political climate in the UK or the States. So, okay, Paul, I think I have a question for you. I always believe that artists, we are the fools of the world, and with great power comes great responsibility. It means because we can say whatever we want, we need to be very careful of what we want and what we say. So I was wondering, what is your aim with projects like super interesting podcasts about Brexit and European artists? I was thinking about giving you some options, but I think I'm going to let you.
Well, I mean, where I'm living, we're living now in a time of extraordinary political change. I mean, it's, in my whole lifetime, this has been the most extraordinary time since just before Brexit and now with the American presidential election. And the whole way that we've voted before, we've thought about politics, is completely changing. And every day I'm get more and more gripped by this. So one of the reasons for doing this is just to see how other artists are responding to this and using the Brexit and now the presidential election as a platform to see how they might respond with their art to it. Because it's something that certainly preoccupies me more and more. You know, years ago, by nature, anything you do as an artist is political to a degree. But if I had an idea for a piece of work, or Karen and I had an idea, it wouldn't always automatically be in, I would deem it then, a political context. Whereas now, because the way we relate to one another politically and how media has changed that and politics has changed so much, it's becoming more and more important for me. So that was a very long-winded way of saying it's just very interesting to have artists to come in and talk about how they think this might change the way they make their art or not.
So, Karen, who is the other half of Wisborne, what do you think about this?
Ah, hello. Well, I do agree with Paul. It's become increasingly impossible not to be political. And while some of our early work has been almost domestic and very small and personal, we've become increasingly more politicised. So these topics really matter to us. And also, I think with a time of such uncertainty, it's become really important for us to feel that we too are part of a community. And one of the reasons why we set up this project was to talk to other artists and find out what they think, and really to have a conversation, not just in the sense of having a chat, but to maybe evolve a response that isn't just about Paul as an individual or Karen as an individual or Wishbone as an individual company, but also to really see if there is such a thing as a community response to what's going on. I don't know if there is, but I guess this is an investigation into whether it's possible or even a good thing.
Before coming here, I was thinking yesterday, would it be a moment in the next few weeks, in the next few months, that an artistic leader will take the lead in order to create a community response towards this? Like it happens in the 60s and the 70s with the gay community, where it happens a few years ago with domestic violence. There's always someone that takes the lead on it. And I'm really looking forward to see if that happens.
Well, maybe it will be you.
or not. Or maybe Wisborne.
I think it is interesting, because something I've become very aware of is how language has been owned by the winning side. The winning side has the best language. Take back control, make America great again. And I think having language, creating a tune in someone's head, putting an image in someone's mind, this is the business of artists. And I don't know if we have a specific ideology that we want to promote, but I think we should be certainly taking back our tools and using them for art and community and shared humanity.
Do you have, Jorge, any fears about the future?
I had. Let me explain a little bit. When this happened a few months ago, the Brexit, it was a moment that I feel probably the most insecure about my future that I felt in a really long time. London has been my home for the last 10 years, and I speak the language-ish. And I work with English funding, with British funding. I work with incredible artists based in Britain. That's what is going to happen now. And that fear was kind of like highlight a few days ago when the American election result was so shocking for me that I didn't have any idea that that was going to happen. I could imagine that could happen, but I couldn't imagine that that could happen at the same time. And then the next day when people start asking me, so what do you think about that? There was a moment that I don't know if I became completely skeptical and more cynical than ever before in my life, or the bravest I have ever been in my life. I start to concentrate much more in my art, thinking today is what matters.
Mm.
The work that I'm doing with this person in front of me is what matters. The product that I'm going to put out there is what matters. I think we are in a moment that incredible changes are happening and really fast in history, like never before. But I think artists, or at least my way I'm going to practice this ride, this roller coaster ride, is take a step back, look how the roller coaster is going, and keep doing my work in the most focused, calm, center, and powerful way that I can. So, sorry, long answer for a short question. No, I am not scared anymore. I think we have an incredible power, and I think no one will take that away from us.
The power of the artist. Well, that's a very good note to think on. Jorge, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.